This meeting of the House Military Veterans Affairs Committee to order. It is now 1:05 p.m. Thursday, February 23rd in the State Capitol Gruenberg Room, number 120. Joining us is Representative Sponholz, Representative Rauscher, Representative Reinbold, Representative Sadler, and online, who is not feeling well, is Representative Parrish, and myself, Representative Tuck. So let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. Please remember to silence your phones all the way down, past vibrate if you don't mind, so it doesn't interfere with our recording systems. And I would also want to thank Caitlin Ellis with our House records, thank Kyle Schrin in the back who's moderating the meeting, and thank my committee staff, Kendra Kloster. Today we're bringing up House Bill 126, the Organized Militia Workers Compensation, for its second hearing. And again, House Bill 126 basically extends workers' compensation benefits to the organized while participating in training exercises. Currently, Alaska statutes already allows for workers' compensation benefits towards the organized militia when called into active service, so this would be extended to training as well. And then we have Marie Marks in the back that can answer questions. And along with Marie Marks, we should have Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole coming up, and then there we go. It will be online for any questions that we may have also. And then I see Mr. Jordan also here for any questions that we may have. So, do we have any amendments to House Bill 126? Representative Rauscher.
Before we get to amendment, could I ask a question?
Sure, yes, most definitely.
Now that we have Ms. Marks here, maybe I could re-ask a question.
Sure, okay.
And I believe I have received an answer in the past couple of days, but I thought maybe the others might not have. And I was wondering if we could, if I could ask her that question again. That just on the record, so everybody get an idea of what we're talking about.
Most definitely, if you don't mind restating your question.
You bet, appreciate it. And I believe the question that was raised the last time we met was understanding the cost to the state for this this insurance before they get hurt, and then the cost after they would get hurt. If someone actually did get hurt, and I believe that was what we were basically trying to understand, those costs and how the state incurs or doesn't incur them.
Yes. For the record, my name is Marie Marks. I'm the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation. Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, before if workers' compensation does not cover the employee, then the remedy is through the courts. And so workers' compensation is an insurance program that provides prompt, efficient, limited benefits to an employee, and in exchange for those providing those benefits, the injured worker gives up their right to sue and gives up the right to pursue pain and suffering and punitive damages and so forth. So it's a limited benefit system, and they call it the Great Compromise because that's what it really is. It's a compromise that really resulted from the Industrial Revolution when there were severe injuries and resulting lawsuits that put employers out of business. So before workers' comp is in place, it would be the tort remedy and whatever damages are pursued through that. Once coverage is extended, workers' compensation coverage, then an injured worker whose injury falls within that coverage is entitled to limited benefits, and those benefits are medical costs, indemnity, which is wage loss benefits, death benefits in the case of a fatality, and in some cases reemployment benefits. The indemnity, the wage loss, is calculated based on a injured worker's gross weekly earnings, and that's capped under our law. That's capped right now. The cap is $1,239 per week. Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, did that answer your question?
I think so, but so it's my understanding that there is no cost to the state, so to speak, unless somebody gets hurt, and then it would matriculate out over the hundreds of employees, but there would be a slight rise in premium across the board there. Is that right?
Through to the chair, Representative Rauscher, and I believe the Director of Risk Management, Scott Jordan, testified to that as the employer, and that is really the state of Alaska as the employer, testified that the state doesn't incur additional premiums or doesn't charge out additional premiums. That was his testimony. And then as far as the cost, he testified that the what cost would be the benefits paid. And so under workers' compensation, there's no way to know what benefits will be paid in any one case, because an injured worker can be out for 2 weeks or they can be out for 3 months. They can incur a small doctor bill if they cut their finger and get a couple stitches, or if it's a traumatic injury, they can have extended medical costs. There isn't really a way to estimate that cost.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
And to that point, so I actually was looking, reviewing my case file, and I saw that there were zero fiscal notes from administration and labor and DMVA, the Division of Department of Military Veterans Affairs. My understanding is that a zero fiscal note says we know there will be no cost. And Ms. Marks, my interpretation of what Mr. Jordan told us previously is that we don't know the cost, and if there's likely to be even a small cost, I would think it'd be more appropriate to have an indeterminate fiscal note on this, because you know nothing's free in this world. And if we add another 77 and plus people, there's going to be a cost, which will be reflected someplace, but we don't know exactly. So I would like to, I don't know if it's a motion, but request that we do have an indeterminate fiscal note on this bill to reflect the uncertainty of the actual cost.
And through the chair, Representative Sandler, I don't know if that required a response, but I would just defer to risk management for them to discuss their fiscal note. Of course, to the Workers' Compensation Division, it would not require anything, any additional cost to administer that type of coverage.
But what I can come back to is if this is free, great, let's cover everybody all the time if it's free, but I suspect it's not.
Through the chair, Representative Sandler, and that I think
Sandler.
Is...
No, Ann.
I apologize. Through the chair, Representative Sadler.
<Thank you.
laughs> it is, and I think that the Division of Risk Management is the best entity to answer questions regarding their fiscal note.
Okay. Does he exist in the cloud? Or?
Yes. Mr. Jordan, you're with Risk Management. Yes, do you mind joining us?
Should I stay?
You're more than welcome to stay. If you want to pull up another chair, that we have both of you guys, the tag team, any questions that we may have. And please state your name and affiliation for the record.
For the record, Scott Jordan, Director, Division of Risk Management. And if you could restate the question.
Sure. My question is, again, I know that nothing in this world is free, and we're extending, you know, certainly the bill has some benefit. There's some value. And so if there's value to providing coverage under workers' compensation by adding these, I think, 77 or so people, then that cost should be, if we don't know it, we should say we don't know it, but that a zero fiscal note says there we know there is no cost. But I think what we heard yesterday, and we'll hear it again today, is if we don't know what any cost will be, I think that deserves an indeterminate fiscal note, which, again, says there may be a cost or there's likely to be a cost, but we don't know how much it is. The difference between agnosticism and atheism.
through the chair, you know, what you're saying is not incorrect, but the problem that we have is for most state employees, we know what their salary is. It's reported by each individual department, so we know how to generate a rate. These folks don't show up on any agency's employee count or FTE count, so there is no way for us to generate a rate for these. I mean, I agree with you that if we did have a claim on one of these individuals, that we would definitely see a premium, possibly a small increase, but a premium for that agency for that claim. But at this point, we don't have any way of calculating it. So it's.
So I appreciate it, and that rather makes my point for me that we don't have a way of calculating it. So it's indeterminate. And again, these are folks who are going to be carrying equipment out in rough areas, doing things more so than the standard state of Alaska worker in a cubicle. They're going to be out on the ground in boots doing rough things, and the opportunity for injuries is going to be larger. And in looking actually at line 8 on the first page of the bill, it says someone who suffers an injury or disability is an employee of the state for purposes of the chapter. So they will be calculated in.
Through the chair, also understand this is just adding them for training. They're already on the books, so to speak, for if they're called out for a mission by the governor. Mm-hmm. This is just adding training to their list of duties that they already have as a call-out.
Okay.
And if I may, so because they're already covered under workman's comp for their active duty activities, was there ever a rate determined for that? Or was it just something that was just there? They still don't have an FTE designation. Have we seen since there may have been some injuries while performing their activities an increase to our workman's comp payments?
Chair Tuck, they've been on the books for so long, it's hard for me to tell you. I mean, I've only been here since 98, but it's hard for me to tell you if they were calculated in prior to that. But I know that all the different groups that are similar to this, like search and rescue and ambulance and EMT drivers, those were all taken into account when we started generating premiums. Now, it was probably taken into account as a whole, and when I say as a whole, it means workers' comp as a whole to all agencies and not individually to these different agencies that have these groups. But it is not, there's no way for us to individually count these people because they're not reported on the FTEs.
And so if I may, then so they're part of the collective, and sounds like a lot of it could be absorbed just by being part of a collective. So you know, if we were to see an increase, how soon would we see an increase in our workman's comp based on the collective, based on this new provision, and what would cause that increase?
Okay. Chair Tuck, you're correct. It's you know, they're calculating as a whole. But if we were to see a claim and it concluded within let's say it concluded within FY17, you would see that claim on their FY18 premiums, and it's amortized over 5 years. So in other words, that claim then is part of their claims experience for 5 years.
If I could, sure.
Yes.
And I'm looking around, I think I'm the only one who's been on the Finance Committee. We were always exhorted by our chairman to be wary of the little foxes that spoil the vineyards. You know, it's little things, little fiscal notes that will build up the costs and so forth. We are the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, and it's a policy decision. Certainly for us to decide this should be the policy, it was within our purview. But the actual cost, I think, might be something that the Finance Committee would want to put their eyes on. So, again, I'd review my request for the indeterminate.
You removed your request?
I'm sorry. No, I maintain my request.
Maintain your request. I'm sorry. I didn't catch that. Okay, so we have a motion.
You want to put the formal motion?
Yeah, if you would like
for
to.
For the record, then, Mr. Chairman, I move that the House Bill 126, version 30, LSO 357, /D for Delta, be given an indeterminate fiscal note.
Okay. I'm going to object to that. I guess we could discuss it, but I actually have something to say before. So sure. It seems to me that whether or not a bill gets a fiscal note is the decision of the departments involved. I've never seen, as long as I've been in here, a committee just deciding, oh, we're going to add a fiscal note to a bill.
And that's a good question. I know that fiscal notes have been changed during committee to where it got down to a zero fiscal note. But often it's through dialogue that we determine more details on a bill. Representative Vice Chair Ledoux.
And actually, when you talk about that policy, I tried to zero out a fiscal note last year on a bill. And I did zero it out in committee, and the speaker nevertheless referred it to finance and told me that it wasn't my decision to zero out a fiscal note.
Okay, and let me ask another question underneath this topic. So just like we can't figure out what the potential premium will be in the future based on this additional classification of workers being covered under these conditions, we also can't really determine what it's going to cost the state if we don't have this coverage, but we know it's going to be many, many, many times larger than any premium would cost us to cover it. I mean, that's a simple statement. We can look at the past and see, you know, for one example, we had one person that had a claim that was larger than the entire budget for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs in 1 year. Mm-hmm. So the real question is, do we really want to put ourselves at that type of risk? And what is the cost of that risk? So I guess there's no question in there, just more of a statement. Yes, Representative Sandler.
Thank you. And I'm noting that each of these three fiscal notes, there's been no further analysis. These are all the initial versions. We have an amendment that I think will come before us, which will add disability and death instead of just disability. And we all know that when someone dies on the state dime, there are costs involved. So I think if we go ahead and adopt this amendment, that would be further need to have the cost evaluated. And again, we don't know what the cost is. I think that's just what interim fiscal notes for.
Is your objection still maintained on the indeterminate fiscal note? Any other further discussion on the indeterminate fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yes. Go ahead. Is this, is Representative Justin Parrish?
Yes, this is Representative Justin Parrish, serving Juneau Valley. I'd like to say that I do not support changing the fiscal note, not only because of the people who have cited in the first place are professionals, but also in every case or in every scenario thus far envisioned, the state's exposure will be lower in the event of one of our brave militia people being harmed. And the cost to litigation for family and the state also should be removed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Parrish. We're going to go ahead and take a roll call vote. However, Representative Parrish, since you're over the teleconference, it's going to be limited to the members that are here in this room. Okay, let's go ahead and, if you don't mind, Ms. Ellis.
Representative Sadler.
Yes.
Representative Reinbold.
Yes.
Representative Sponholz.
No.
Representative Ledoux.
No.
Representative Rauscher.
No.
Chair Tuck.
No.
Two yeas, four nays.
Okay, so with four yeas, I'm sorry,
two yeas.
Yeah, thank you. Four nays, two nays, the amendment fails. Okay, any further discussions before we go on to the next amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. I've tried to put together a kind of a grid. There's an awful lot of moving pieces here, so I've got a grid with National Guard, ASDF, active duty, training, and death. I want to make sure I can kind of fill them in my blanks so I know where they're covered. So with a series of questions, with your indulgence.
Sure.
So currently, National Guard, who are an activated duty, they are covered by what?
Sure, I can do that. Through the chair, when you say covered by what, you mean what? How many different types of coverage they would have?
Or? Are they covered by, are they state employees, or are they covered by workers' compensation?
They are, through the chair, they are covered as state employees, so they get every benefit that a state employee would get.
Okay, and includes workers' compensation?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And ASDF, same thing, if activated?
Through the chair, yes.
Great. Okay, now with your indulgence, thank you. So National Guard, when they're undergoing training, are they currently covered by workers' compensation as state employees?
Through the chair, no.
Okay.
And I would like that verified by Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole, but I believe that National Guard is not covered for any kind of training mission.
Okay. But if they're activated, or if they're in training, they are not. Okay. And currently, ASDF employees, volunteers, are not covered during training. That's the issue on the table.
Sure, that's correct.
Okay, great. And what about death benefits? If someone's in the National Guard and they are, well, this gets complicated, if they're activated for national service to go fight a flood in Missouri or something, I assume that they would be covered by whatever federal guard benefits. If the National Guard in Alaska is activated to fight a flood in St. Mary's and they die, would they receive workers' death benefits as a state employee, or how?
Through the chair, if they're activated by the governor, yes, they would. They would have, again, they would have benefits as if they were a state employee.
Okay.
If they were activated by the federal government, then they would be covered by the federal government.
Good deal. And the last box to check is in case of death, if someone is serving with the ASDF and they are, I guess, either active, activated or training, are there any death coverage been to them?
Through the chair, currently they would be covered. If they were activated by the governor, they would be covered for death benefits.
Say again, please.
They would be covered for death benefits if they were activated by the governor. They don't have any benefits currently for training missions.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Okay. Any further questions or statements? Okay, I do have another amendment, that being amendment number 2. And everybody have a copy of that? And basically what it is doing is adding the death benefits to, in case someone is deceased during training activities. So I move amendment number 2.
I'll object for just to hear the explanation.
Sure. Representative Sather, there's objection, and basically just adding death benefits to those who are in training along with any type of disability benefits. Yeah, and would you like to respond, Ms. Marks?
Sure. For the record, Marie Marks, a Workers' Compensation Division Director. Correct. It just conforms the language that will be placed in the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act, what was already proposed in what is referred to, I believe, as the military code. It would just make them conform with each other.
Any further questions for Representative Reinbold?
If you don't mind, do you not anticipate any death? Is that why you're not having a fiscal note on here?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, the Division of Risk Management is the employer arm that would pay the death benefits. And I believe all discussion about the fiscal note refers to the Division of Risk Management's fiscal note. The Division of Workers' Compensation just administers benefits, and so there would be no increased operational cost as a result of this extension of coverage.
And Mr. Jordan, would you like to respond?
Scott Jordan, Director, Division of Risk Management. Through the chair, I would say certainly we don't anticipate a death. I mean, it certainly could happen, but we have not had any in the history that I'm aware of. We've had the one injury, which was an ankle injury. So, again, it's a difficult thing for us to try to calculate. And, you know, understand that our workers' comp costs go up and down, you know, in the millions. We can go from $22 million to $26 million the following year, and those premiums stay fairly consistent. We're spreading that risk out over all the departments. So, you know, a death, you know, as tragic and as maybe as expensive as it is, that gets spread out. So it's not something that we can calculate, and it's not something that DMVA would incur on their own, in other words.
Representative Reinbold.
So there's no increase financial risk to the state, is that correct? You're not going to come back next year and say, oh, whoops, forgot about this, like we hear almost every year. Oh, wait, that cost a couple $1 million, sorry. You know, I mean, not to be sarcastic, but I'm really sick of it, and people keep coming back with unintended consequences, and that's why the government is continuing to grow. We've been told if we put money here and money there, we're going to have a reduction of recidivism, a reduction of sexual, whatever, violence. And the statistics are just not bearing out the massive investment of the $9.5 billion we're investing in the state. We still have some of the worst statistics, and that's why I'm just really tired of hearing if we only just do this, it's going to save the world, and then it ends up not. Yet we're stuck with a bill. So, I mean, I'm just asking. You're not anticipating any increase in costs.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, if I can just maybe provide some data to for that. Thankfully, workplace fatalities are very few, and they have been decreasing over the years. And last year, there was only 17 work-related deaths. Again, thankfully, that is a great statistic. I don't know how many of those
That's
were
a lot.
And we would like to see zero. Absolutely, we'd like to see zero. But the historically, safety measures have been improving, and they have been reducing over the years. And we would love to see zero. And ultimately, I hope that's where we get to. But of the 17, I'm not sure how many of them would be state employees, and I don't have that information on hand. But they are a few, if that data helps.
Mr. Chairman, is that statewide? Is that statewide, private, and public sector?
It is all work-related deaths that are suffered by employees in the state of Alaska, private, public, statewide, correct.
But through the chair, you don't have a breakdown?
Through the chair of Representative Reibold, I'd be happy to obtain that information and follow up and provide that to you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just a real quick point is that this is only an amendment to change Section 1, which is a new section, and it's just conforming to other areas that we have. It's just keeping it consistent. Yeah, Representative Sadler.
Are you saying this is a simple amendment?
Saying that it's conforming to other parts of the statute. You say, yes, I am. Any further discussions on amendment number 2? And that's version 30-LS0357/D.1, in case I didn't put that on the record earlier. Is your objection still maintained?
Yeah, let's do the vote. Thanks.
Okay. Ms. Ellis.
Wait.
Did I hear a murmur? Anybody have any further comments? Okay, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I may put my comments on record.
Yes, Representative Parrish, go for it.
This is Representative Parrish, Chumo Valley. I'm speaking in support of your amendment. Entirely in favor of our language being consistent and comprehensive throughout statute. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Parrish. Ms. Ellis.
Representative Rauscher.
Just real quick, it's
Amendment 2, is that what we're doing?
Amendment number 2, yes.
Yes.
Representative Sadler.
Yes.
Representative Reinbold.
Yes.
Representative Sponholz.
Yes.
Representative
Ledoux?
Yes.
Chair Tuck?
Yes.
6 yeas.
So 6 yeas, amendment number 2 passes.
Chair, was there an amendment 1 that I missed?
Your amendment. I took that as your fiscal note amendment, as okay. Amendment okay. Number 1.
You had to remind them I voted.
Okay. All right, we're back to the original bill. Any further discussions on House Bill 126? Yes, Representative Sadler.
Just help the people watching this, listening to this, understand this is kind of plugging a potential hole. How big a deal is this? This is not a huge risk. I don't want to characterize it, but help people understand how important this is, how effective this is, and how will it be felt immediately, will be in effect immediately. Help me understand what this, and right on mic, too.
through the chair. I guess I want to understand your question correctly. If this bill passes, how quickly it will be effective?
What risk does it address, and how significant is that risk, and how
a hazard? Through the chair, again, as I testified a couple days ago, they have 2 days a month that they'll be training, and then approximately 4 days, which was reported to me, 4 days where they'd be doing exercises. So the risk is 24 to 28 days a year, where you'll have anywhere from, you know, a few of these members all the way up to 76, I think, is the max number of members out doing training missions.
Mm-hmm. And so you could put it in man days, but it's not, given the scope of the state workforce, state of Alaska employees, I guess I'm trying to get, this is not that big a hazard that we're covering. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks.
Representative Sponholz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I think that, you know, volunteers who sign up to actively volunteer with the Alaska State Defense Force are doing their state a really great service in ensuring that they have the kind of security that they need should something happen while they are training in preparation for an unforeseeable but emergency event where we need to call upon them to respond, ensuring that they have the security that should something that happens to them where they might that might jeopardize their livelihood is secured and taken care of, I think will allow a lot more people, will allow people who volunteer in this way the confidence to go forward and do so and not worry that they're jeopardizing their families, financial security in any way. We know that in the state of Alaska, one of the major causes of homelessness and of bankruptcy is healthcare crises that throw sort of the working poor into financial desperation. And this is just one more way that we can ensure that people that are serving the state of Alaska through the Alaska State Defense Force don't have to face that kind of risk. And I'm really looking forward to voting in favor of this. Thank you.
And Representative Rauscher, do you have a mic up for as a hand being up?
Is that how we speak or not?
Yeah.
To the chair.
Yes.
I just like to say that I do support this piece of legislation, but I also wanted to make sure that I was on the record that I do think, even though I voted against representatives from Anchorage's amendment to actually go out in search of a fiscal note, if there might be one, that I still think that there just might be a cost involved here that we're going to realize later, but I still intend on voting at this time for the amendment with the information that we have, and I appreciate those who brought it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Representative Rembel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I want to say thank you for bringing this forward. I do think it's very important if our volunteer State Defense Force is called in for an emergency and they're our heroes and they come help us in a time of emergency that we need to take care of them when they're stepping up in an action for us. However, I'm going to say that this is an inconsistent message. We just had Department of Military and Veterans Affairs Subcommittee close out, and the only cut that we made was a small token of money to help empower our rural communities to prepare for natural or man-made disaster. And I just think this is a completely inconsistent. I think that was a terrible mistake in our Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. And I would just ask you, Mr. Chairman, to please reconsider what happened there. But with that, I'm definitely going to be supporting this, and I thank you for bringing it forward.
Okay, thank you, Representative Rembel. Just for the record, I don't chair the Budget Subcommittee. That's a different chairman. That's already action that's been taken, and any future amendments can be brought forward to the finance chair. The finance committee. So, and it is unfortunate. I mean, that's a program that I hope that we've been able to implement further with the governor's budget increment. However, I don't want to get on that because that's a different situation. I just want to focus on the final comments on this bill right here. Any other future or any additional comments to House Bill 126? Representative Sadler.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Seems like a good bill. I think it covers an unlikely but potentially bad risk for individuals. And I know that the ASCF has had a hard time with this one particular injury in the past. Would you entertain a motion to make this a committee bill by a vote of this committee?
I would entertain that. I mean, I did one of the things that I asked at the beginning is that I only planned on doing this for bills brought forward by the administration. I didn't want to make it personal legislation, otherwise I get all the benefit for all that. And I really want to make it something that we all are trying to help the department in improving Title 26. We're going to have a series of these bills coming forward. We're going to do our best to make sure it's mostly cleanup, making sure that our guardsmen have the necessary protections that they need and that the department has the necessary tools that they can effectively protect and respond to Alaska's needs. So I'd be more than happy on this bill right here to make it a committee bill by vote independently of what we had previously taken.
So, Mr. Chair, so with that goal in mind of support for this particular bill, I would move that this HB 126 be converted into a committee bill from the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs.
Point of order.
Yes.
I'm sorry, isn't it already a committee bill?
It is. It's currently a committee bill, so I guess the motion would be anyone who wants to object to it being a committee bill.
It's available, yeah.
Okay, so you want to make restate your motion to... to
a motion needs to be made in the affirmative, and then those who object would object. So I think the motion would stand that's voiced in the affirmative, and if you object, then you'd vote negative. Vote no.
Currently, it's a committee bill. If there is an objection to it to be a committee bill, then I would entertain that motion.
Point of order.
Yes, Vice Chair.
We've already voted that the chair has the permission to let any bill be a committee bill. We don't have to be taking motions with respect to each bill.
Yep. Sure.
So if there's an objection to this bill being a committee bill, I will entertain a motion for that.
Mr. Chairman, I move to express my opposition to it being a committee bill. I was trying to express support for the bill, but I'm being maneuvered into saying no, but okay, that's the motion required, then that's my motion.
Yeah, because it is currently a committee bill, so now there's an objection to this being a committee bill, so I'm going to take it as, if you don't mind, stating it in the form of a motion to not adopt this as a committee bill.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs not adopt House Bill 126 as a committee bill.
And I'm going to object to that because we've already voted on that. The appropriate motion would be that you would move to rescind our...
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'm not trying to mess things up. I withdraw my motion. I'm just trying to express the committee's explicit approval of this bill as opposed to the universal. So for the good of the bill and for the process of the committee, I withdraw my motions.
Thank you, Representative Sadler, and thank you, Vice Chair Ledoux. I believe it would be correct to actually rescind action prior to then carry forward action individually on this. So thank you for the clarification. Any further discussions on House Bill 126 before we go to a vote? I just want to make a final comment that I thank the committee for the exercises that we're going through, and that this is very important. I know that it's hard to determine what the costs are, and that's the majority of our questions. But one thing is for certain, that if we do not have some sort of insurance for this, we're putting ourselves, our department, at very high risk. And with the budget problems that we're facing today, we want to make sure that the department has the tools that it needs. Just for example, it was mentioned in a previous meeting that one leg injury alone cost the department its entire budget in 1 year to cover that person and its costs. So, so even though right now, currently, this does not cost the state any additional money to extend those workers' compensations during the training program, we hope that the department continues to operate safely and that we won't see any additional costs in the far future. And with that, Ms. Ellis, if you don't mind taking a roll call vote. Oh, wait, I'll entertain a motion for movement of House Bill 126. Madam Vice Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 126, version 30, LS0357/D, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
Any objections? All right, thank you very much, committee members. Thank you so much for your testimony, Ms. Marks, Mr. Jordan. And thank you very much for tuning in, Representative Parrish, and also thank you, Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole, for being available for any questions. Representative Rauscher.
I would like to thank Representative Parrish for staying and not sharing. And I would also like to thank the chair through this process for his work, but the only thing I fault him for is demoting Kendra from chair to aide.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Appreciate it. Any other comments before we close? All right. The House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee stands adjourned at 1:45.